G'day, I am home sweet home. That laughed. Well, that felt like an epic journey. It was an epic journey. And I'm going to talk a bit more about that at the end of this update. I know that there's been a lot of holiday stuff over recent weeks. And some people thought that's awesome. Other people want to see the InfoSec stuff. So I'm going to do more of the, not just the InfoSec stuff, but the techie stuff for the first part of this weekly update. And then I'm going to do all the holiday stuff at the end of it. So if you want to stick around for that, that's awesome. If you just want to hear about not just InfoSec stuff, but some 3D printer stuff as well, which was partly due to my adventures on holiday, I'm going to talk about that now. And I am going to start where I normally start, sponsor-wise. Sponsor this week is safepass.me. Now, SafePass has been a sponsor many times in the past. So big thanks, first of all, to those folks. Second of all, go check them out. The SafePass, tell about on holidays, can't you? Are the folks who use Pwn passwords in order for you to check all of your things internally, your things being your password things, of course, internally against things like your AD environment. And they seem to be getting quite popular doing that. So good on those folks and good on them for sponsoring my blog. Message this week up there on the sponsor bar is credential stuffing, which, of course, is still a massive, massive thing. Is the biggest threat to organizations. Find out how you can protect your network right now with SafePass ME. So please go and have a check of them. And hopefully we'll see them around much more in 2021, because I don't think the credential stuffing thing is going to go away. And in fact, if this year already in the last week, particularly those of you in America, is anything to go by, then this year is going to be, is it going to be more messed up than last year? That's a high bar. It's a high bar. We'll see. Either way, credential stuffing problem. Check them out, safepass.me. All right, moving on. So thanks to the folks chiming in back here. It's so much easier to see everything when I've got my wall of screens and the lights right and the sound's good and there's no bats or other weird stuff in the background. Anyway, like I said, I'm going to come back to the holiday stuff. I want to start on some tech-related things, and there are a couple of purchases I've either made or am about to make during my travels. And it's good getting away, because you do get a little bit of headspace to think about some of the bigger things in life, such as how would I have an IoT-connected screen that I could sit on my desk to show something that I wanted to push from an API? That's one of the bigger things. So one of these, I think I was laying awake at night, not able to sleep because brain. And I was like, oh, you know, it would be really cool. I should have like a screen somewhere, just like a little display, a little IoT display somewhere on my desk. And like every time someone subscribes to Have I Been Pwned and verifies their account, it's just like a tiny, tiny little flash. And then the number ticks over. It's 3.something million at the moment. But I don't know what the point is, like what the 0.million something is, that the point of it is so I can see. And I thought, oh, that would be cool. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, yeah, there'll be a whole heap of those little IoT things. And lots of people had suggestions that involved lots of wires and circuit boards and things. And as I said, with the other IoT things I've done, like, that's great. And I think people who do that are awesome. Much, much, much respect. I would like something I can just plug in and code and leave the hardwiring stuff to someone else. Now, the thing that's come up that looks pretty good, and this is the thing that I think I will order maybe over the weekend as I start to actually unpack and clean up my life again, is a Lemetric connected clock for a smart home. And basically it's a display. Look, if you just go to lemetric.com, you'll see it. But it's a display that looks like it's color, some nice little gradients on some of the boxes, some fairly sort of, I guess, low res, almost like 8-bit style graphics, that you can either have a clock on or a tweet count, or I believe there's an API behind it as well. And the only reason I haven't bought it yet is I just want to make sure that I can push things to it and it's not like you must control it with your smartphone the whole time or something stupid like that. So I'm going to check that out, but I'm just looking on the other screen here and it looks really kind of cool, and I think it'll be a nice little display. And then I was thinking in my mind, oh, wouldn't it be cool if I could see, like, when people are doing searches on, say, Have I Been Pwned, what the hit ratio is. So, you know, like what percentage of searches or how many searches have there been in like the last 60 seconds and what percentage of them have returned a result, i.e. the person was pwned. There's not a whole lot of point for that other than it just seems like a cool geeky thing to do. So I think I'm going to check out Lemetric. And if anyone has used that before, I'd love to hear about it in the comments. Now, immediate response here from Will. Will Snow says, be careful with Lemetric. It's very talkative. Now, I assume you mean in terms of like, is it polling an API somewhere or something in order to see what's updated? And maybe that's the talkative thing. If you could clarify, Will, I'd be really interested in knowing what your experiences are. Tradie Trev says, you can code it. You can code it. I'll wire anything up. I think Tradie Trev might be a real tradie. All right, so that was the first thing. Now, the second thing, the very last part of my journey, we went and had a couple of nights with probably my oldest friend, so someone I went to kindergarten with and have kept in touch with for many years since. And someone, you know, you get these friends every now and then, like you don't see them only every like 5 years or something like that. I can't remember the last time I saw this friend. But you're still good mates and you just pick up from where you left off. And anyway, he is right into 3D printing. And I was like, they always really look cool, but I haven't had quite the inclination to jump in. And he started showing me all the things he was printing and the things he was doing with his kids. He's a teacher too, so he's like right into the how do we educate children about creating, I guess in this case, real world things from digital things. And when I looked at what his kids were doing, and his eldest is 8 years old, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. You know, tell me about this 3D printer. Anyway, so he has got a Prusa. Now, I had never heard of Prusa before, and I was kind of like, all right, well, you know, show me how the whole thing works, and it's pretty much what you'd expect with a 3D printer. I know that some of them come in enclosures, some of them don't. This is, you know, a non-enclosed printer. And the more I started looking, I was like, this is actually really cool. And I was looking at the 3D CAD software stuff he was using. I was getting quite tempted by it. And he was really, really into it, not just the idea of 3D printing stuff, but the Prusa model or the Prusa's way of creating these devices. And he was like, yeah, you know, like here's the background of it. And I thought, oh, like I'll ask the masses, I'll ask people on Twitter. Now, very often when I ask people on Twitter, you know, do you know of a thing to do such and such, say with the little display before, the Lemetric, there'll be a whole range of different pieces of feedback and it's very hard to figure out like what's the good one. But when I asked on Twitter and I asked about Prusa and I mentioned a Dremel in there as well, which looked kind of good from some of the online reviews, there was massive support for Prusa. So people were really, really, really behind the idea of Prusa. And it is a little bit more expensive than some of the other ones out there. I know a lot of people said go and get an Ender or something like that. I mean, it's not crazy expensive. You can go online and see how much it is. But there was so much support for it. I was like, yeah, screw it. Like, let's buy one of these. Like, let's get one of these and then I'll make it with Ari, who's 11 years old. He's a good age, I think, to do this sort of stuff. And then we'll start building shit. And I don't know exactly what we're going to build yet, but I just think it's going to be cool. And now to that effect, when I said we'll build it, you can buy it either assembled or disassembled for a couple of hundred bucks less. And a bunch of people, including this mate of mine, were like, look, it'll take somewhere between 4 to 8 hours to assemble it. So I'm picturing it as like a good Lego kit. And if you assemble it yourself, you will learn a lot more about it because you'll see how all the parts and things work together. So I have ordered the unassembled one. It looks like it's going to take about a month to come. And then I bought a whole bunch of, what do you call the spools, the resins, the filament. I bought a whole bunch of filament as well. I know there are different kinds of filament that do different things. I don't understand any of this yet. It's going to be, for me, a little bit like the whole IoT thing I've done recently where it's like there's a steep learning curve, but I think it's going to be kind of cool at the end of it. So this will probably be a February activity somewhere. So we'll put this thing together. We'll start making some 3D stuff. I'm sure a lot of it will just be like dinosaurs and things that are good fun, but hopefully we'll make some really useful stuff as well. And as I start doing that, of course, I'll share that with everyone when I get to it. Now, looking at some of the other comments in here. Will, so we're back on Lemetric here. Even though I'm only using the clock, it gets the top spot in my pie hole statistic because it keeps calling the API. How many times does a clock need to poll an API? You know, can you not just do like plus 1 second and then just, that's interesting. What if the time zone changed? The time zone changed? The time. What if you went into like daylight saving? I don't know. That seems a bit over the top. Dominic, I've been tempted with the 3D stuff, but don't need any more plastic waste in my house. We'll get back to the environment later on. Talk about people getting upset with me with the environment. I think that from an education perspective, this will be amazing. And I suspect that buying 1 kilogram, I think they're about 1 kilogram spools of filament, is going to be a tiny, tiny fraction of all the other waste we create, which I know doesn't sound very good, but I think in the scheme of things is going to have a very small environmental footprint. And of course, there is another side to this, which is all of the educational value and hopefully being able to do some amazing things with it. So there's that. Darren, are the 3D scanners any good to replicate stuff? I don't know. I really don't know. I was speaking to my son today and I was sort of saying, look, wouldn't it be cool if we could make like a model of your head and then we can print your head? Now, I'm not sure if there's an app which does that with some degree of fidelity. I know 3D scanners are a thing and I know nothing more about than that. If anyone knows, leave a comment. That would be awesome. Now, what I will link through to, and in fact, I watched this on the plane on the way home just yesterday, there's a really good video which gave me a much better understanding of Prusa and the background of a lot of this 3D printing stuff, and it's called The Road to 100,000 Prusa 3D Printers. And this is really, really fascinating. It's a video by the founder, and it's just, when I watch this, it's like, these are my people. these are our people, like people who are on the same wavelength, as I'm sure many of you are out there, in terms of the maker sort of attitude. You build something from nothing, create something which is a very community-centric thing. So I'm really looking forward to actually diving into this. All right, let's talk about some security stuff, some InfoSec stuff. And boy, oh boy, is this one a mess. Now, I only tweeted this a couple of hours ago. The headline here is, Tasmania police called in after ambulance patient details published online. So this was literally posted 4 hours ago. Someone brought it to my attention on Twitter. The private details of every Tasmanian. Now, just to pause there for a second, in case you're not from Australia, Tasmania is the little state we have that hangs off down the bottom. Now, the only state in Australia I haven't been to after this trip, but that is definitely next on the list. Tasmania is, as I understand it, a super cool, awesome, very natural kind of place, very low population. I'm not even sure how many people. Ooh, my watch just told me that the coffee machine might not be plugged in. Charlotte is downstairs unpacking her Christmas things, or rather packing her Christmas things away, so she may bump the coffee machine. Isn't it nice to have IoT? How many people in Tasmania? I bet you it's only a couple of million tops. Wikipedia, Tasmania. Because this is relevant in terms of how many people have been impacted by this. Population, 540,000. Okay, so not a lot of people at all. Anyway, story goes on here. The private details of every Tasmanian who has called an ambulance since November last year have been published online by a third party in a list still updating each time paramedics are dispatched. Almost feels like a premature news story, doesn't it? The breach of Ambulance Tasmania's paging system has been described as horrific by Health and Community Services Union, which seems like a fair term. But here's the bit which is really nasty. Down here it says, information made public also includes a patient's HIV status, gender and age, raising concerns that could lead to discrimination or stigmatization, which is a pretty reasonable concern. It's unbelievable, State Secretary Tim Jacobson said. If I were a patient, I'd be upset. Yeah, too bloody right. I'd be concerned and want to know immediately both what government has done about closing off this, but also what the government's now doing or likely to do to address any real breaches of privacy of the patients. Now, I'd love to see someone do a good post-mortem on this in terms of what actually happened, but if this is live updating data, then clearly the back-end system to this ambulance paging service is itself exposed. Now, is this another public MongoDB? Is it all going into like ambulance.csv somewhere and the whole thing just keeps updating and it's publicly accessible? But there are just all sorts of levels of things that need to go wrong for this to happen. Like, this is not just like we screwed up one thing. Why is this publicly accessible in the first place? Is it then a complete lack of authentication? Is it not firewalled off? Is it not DMZ'd? Is it DMZ, we're in Australia again. Like, what are the number of things that have to go wrong in order for a cock-up of this magnitude? So given this is only about 4 hours old, I suspect we'll see a lot more of this in the news in the coming days. So that is an absolute shocker. Let's see where it goes from here. All right, so little InfoSec story on that one. Now, that was about actually the only InfoSec thing I had this week. There are some other online things, which is more just going to go back to my previous guitar lessons blog post. So having a look at some of the comments here, because we're probably going to get back on these 3D scanners and things. Actually, there is another InfoSec thing, and Samic Edits has just raised in the comments, what do you think about the major Italian provider leaked 2.5 million home mobile data and SIMs and PII? Now, I did actually tweet this the other day, and it's after I tweeted it, people were like, oh, this was old news. It happened days ago. It's on holidays, damn it. so let me go back to what the actual story was, because it was one of these ones where multiple people did actually raise this in my timeline. And I think it's always sort of interesting once you start to see a bit of a pattern around a topic. Let's see if I can find this in here. Mobile. Ah, I just found the story on it. It was home mobile. Okay. Home mobile. This one from 3 days ago on ZDNet. We're saying Z again now. Italian mobile operator offers to replace SIM cards after massive data breach. Hacker stole the personal data of 2.5 million home mobile subscribers. Now, the concerning thing here, and I did see this in the article I shared the other day as well, it looks like this data has been shared publicly. So there's the usual, here is a screen grab of a dark web forum where the information is for sale. Let's have a look at that image in a new tab so it's not compressed. So we've got birth date, email verified attribute. We've got address, address ID, address type, city, country, and a delete flag. What's really interesting is, yeah, someone's got this facade. They've got a Leisure Suit Larry avatar. Remember Leisure Suit Larry? Leisure Suit Larry avatar on their Hacker Forum profile just here. This person's joined in May 2017. They've literally just got some embedded code here which shows those attributes I just read out. And their message is, any offer, it can be used for SIM swapping. And no matter how many times I see this, the almost sort of mainstream nonchalant manner in which personal data is shared and sold in this way, it still blows me away, because this could be someone selling a spare bed. You know, I've sold a bed recently. Go online to Gumtree, little ad, you know, any offers. And this is 2.5 million Italian people's personal data used for SIM swapping. And the thing that's really upsetting about this is it's not just the sale of the data, it's what is the impact then of the SIM swapping? Because people don't buy this and swap SIMs to do nice things or prank their friends. They use this to then take over other accounts, to then do all sorts of other damage to the individuals that are in there. And the impact of things like this is just, it's pretty much impossible to measure, because it then just goes into the big pool of all the other data that gets taken from all the other places and is used for really nefarious purposes. So in answer to Samic Edit's questions here, it's shit. That's what I think of it. Like, it's just a really, really nasty incident, and it's just another one in a long line of other similar incidents, unfortunately. Okay. Someone said here you can use a photogrammetry to do 3D scanning with a phone. Meshroom is really good if you have a fast desktop. Yes, I do have a fast desktop. And I'm really, really looking forward to getting into this 3D printing stuff. And I must actually carve out time to focus on it, which is going to be good fun. And someone here also says, if it's traditional pages, it could be unencrypted text over radio. Now, here's a fun full circle on pages. So this mate of mine, who I was just staying with down in a place called Narracourt, so it's towards the Victorian border in South Australia, and he works, he volunteers for the CFS, which is the Country Fire Service. So, you know, when there's a fire, he gets contacted, a bunch of other people get contacted, and they go and hopefully put out the fire. It's not just a fire if there's a car crash or they need to do stuff like that. Anyway, he had a pager on his belt, and it was quite funny because we were taking the piss out of him, you know, like, who has a pager these days, really? And he was sort of making the point that they work on a different network to what we'd normally have, 3G or, you know, 4G connections for our phone, apparently much more resilient. So as old school as pagers may seem, particularly for someone working in an emergency service, like, it actually makes a lot of sense. Now, I didn't ask him about the encryption or anything, but I would imagine that, yes, it probably would be unencrypted given the age of pages. Okay. Someone else might comment here. Elizabeth, Nissan leaked code via Git server. Elizabeth, if you have a link to a story on that, I'd be really interested in seeing that. Simon here says, if a non-security guy found a list, i.e. a page on a company with their customer's data, should have been made public, how would I approach reporting it? Contact the company. That's, and I say that very flippantly because I, of all people, know how bloody hard it can be to contact the company. But that's the place to start. Contact the company and go, look, this is what we've found. Now, after the company doesn't answer, which is pretty normal, what do you do from there? There are, in many cases, a local cert in your country who have ways of reporting things like exposed data. Then, of course, there are the likes of journalists that you can contact, but it's got to be something serious because the number of times, even these days, I go to journos I've worked with many times before and go, hey, there's 10 million records exposed here. We can't get any traction with the organization. They go, well, we're actually pretty busy at the moment, and that's basically where things sit at the moment. There's also contact me and I can tweet about it and people generally figure out pretty quickly when I ask for a security contact what that means. But I'm a busy guy too. And I, honestly, like there is a big part of me that feels very, very sad that we are in such a place where there are so many breaches and so much data that we're all just a little bit too busy to deal with really, really serious incidents. So that is a shit place to be. I do have grand plans in the back of my head about how I'd like to deal with this. Maybe this year I'll get to start making some progress on that. So Simon says, the best practice is just message that company. Yeah, pretty much what I said. The list I've found is fairly bad, not personal, but live company data, and personally feel they need a slap on the wrist. Yeah, that seems reasonable. Refer to comments above. Okay, so that was pretty much the InfoSec stuff. If people do have other questions or comments, then leave them there and I'll come back to it. A couple of things have popped up that just pissed me off. I'm going to talk about them because they do relate to a previous blog post and then they will segue me into the discussion about the very last part of that massive holiday. And if folks recall, I wrote a blog post a little while ago about guitar lessons. Now, I don't know anything about guitars. I don't want guitar lessons. I don't give guitar lessons. But I still wrote a blog post that said, if you don't want guitar lessons, stop following me. And this was a reference to a Ricky Gervais skit. And if you haven't seen this from Ricky Gervais, it's epically, epically funny. But he's sort of saying the way people are online, you know, you will put information out there and then people just come out of the woodwork and tell you that's not the information they want. And he likens it to walking down the street and seeing a little flyer for guitar lessons, and you pull the thing off the bottom and you phone the person up and you say, but I don't want guitar lessons. And it's very, very funny the way he does it. And time again, I will tweet something about something I'm doing in my life, usually when it's non-InfoSec related. And let's just call them Muppets. Muppets will jump up out of nowhere and go, I'm unhappy about you talking about this. This is not what I'm interested in. So, all right, well, you don't need to tell me that. You could just go away, you know, like mute me, unfollow me, mute the thread. One of the reasons I put all those holiday pictures in a thread is because you can mute the conversation, and that would be perfectly reasonable. Not for this person. So I tweeted a photo the other, and this is just one of several examples, and I pick it up because Scott jumped in on it as well, and that got kind of funny. So I had a very early start out of Coopapedia. I'm going to talk about Coopapedia shortly. And because it was a very early start, we got a sunrise, beautiful looking sunrise. Like we're just driving down this like desert road and the orange from the sunset and everything's coming up and there's the red dirt and I'm like, oh, we've got to pull over and get a photo. So I pull over, jump out of the car, get a photo, car, sunrise, beautiful, tweet, off we go. Someone says, this is called bragging or simply narcissism. What value do you bring to other people's lives with this tweet? Now, ignoring the irony for a moment of what value that brought to my life, that tweet, before I had a chance to comment, Scott chimed in with the Will Ferrell meme saying, what an idiot, which I thought was a reasonable response. Now, I tongue-in-cheek seconded that. I said, what sort of an idiot doesn't like sunsets? Now, of course, I was the idiot for saying sunset when it was actually sunrise. However, this person, Kermit, their name, and they just got a Kermit the Frog avatar, persists. It's not about the sunset, but the expensive cars and lifestyle you're bragging about in most of the tweets. It's called narcissism. Sorry, I thought this profile was a professional InfoSec insights. Yep, I should ignore. Sorry. Yeah, you're right, actually. You should ignore and you should be sorry because you're behaving like a Scott put an idiot. Now, I'm somewhat familiar with the term narcissism, but I thought I should actually look it up just to be really, really clear, because it's kind of a funny word. Now, narcissism is selfishness involving a sense of entitlement, a lack of empathy, and a need for admiration as characterizing a personality type. Now, this selfishness and sense of entitlement and lack of empathy, I take a photo of a sunrise with a car in it, and that's where you go. Like this, the blog post which I wrote about the guitar lesson thing, I linked to a talk I did at NDC many years ago around Hack Your Career, and I sort of talk about the fact that as soon as you put things out there online, there will always be people that get pissed off to some degree about it. And there's this what I still find to be an unexplainable behavior where if someone sees something which they think is at all reflective of success or anything like that, there is this segment of society that just loses their shit about it. They are so unhappy that you might tweet something that shows that things are going all right for you. So I wasn't real happy about that. So I responded to this person. I said, would you rather I share the tens of thousands of hours of sitting at a keyboard, jet lag, stressed, emotional, and strung out that earned me this, or pick a price point, a lifestyle tailored to your own personal sensitivities? This is my timeline. And this is the thing, like, they were obviously unhappy that it was that car. Now, if it was a car of half the price, would that have been okay? Two-thirds. One, like, where is it? Where is the margin that keeps you happy? And how much do I actually care? Which is probably a good question too. And the other thing about it as well, and I think this is probably what this person misses, for every one person that sees something which is at all reflective of the success that I've had in life and they get pissed about it, there are 20 others who are like, this is awesome. I love this. Now, either I love it because I like cars, or I love it because I like seeing something that's a bit inspirational. I'll tell you what, I spent a big, big, big portion of my time, and I still do even today, looking at things that I don't have or that I can't afford and being inspired by the work that people have done in order to get those things. So I think you get to choose. Do you want to try and find the bad and the negative in everything, or do you want to try and use that as inspiration, or do you want to just be somewhere in the middle and go, meh, not my thing, or move on with life? But the route you choose, which is to actively go out there and denigrate someone or someone else's choices, is the shit route. And that does get you muted very, very quickly, which brings me to the next one. So we flew home yesterday, and I'll talk shortly about why we flew home. And the last photo I had was Charlotte and I sitting in the plane, full masks on. We'll talk about that as well. And then in that same tweet, a photo of us finally being home, and we're down at the beach just over here. Now, I can't read you what the person replied because they've now gone through and deleted all their tweets, which is always a bit of a sign. But it was basically a really, really obnoxious response about how irresponsible we are to travel at the moment. Now, the problem is, I've actually written a blog post that could be a good reference here, is that, believe it or not, things are very different in different parts of the world. Australia is in a very, very different position COVID-wise than most of the rest of the world. New Zealand is really the only other place that comes to mind that's tracking pretty well at the moment. It's very, very different to the UK, where, as I understand it, about 1 in 50 people have now got COVID. It's very, very different to the US, which... well, it's got COVID and a whole bunch of other problems over in the US at the moment as well, doesn't it? And very, very different to the rest of Europe. And we are very, very plugged in to that environment at the moment by virtue of either Charlotte's Norwegian heritage and all her family. They are all the friends that we have all over the world that we regularly hear from. So at the moment, travel through most of Australia, including flying, is very, very safe. We have very, very small numbers. To this day, this state that I live in, the state that's twice the size of Texas, eight times the size of the UK, 5.1 million people, we have had 6 deaths from COVID. We have had one incident pop up today that's causing us a little bit of concern. I might come back to that later on, but that is it. And South Australia, where we just flew back from, very, very similar story. They had one little cluster going back 6-8 weeks now, was it? And all of that is under control and everything there is tracking really well. And to fly from one to the other under very controlled circumstances, quite okay. And, of course, we're balancing up on this, actually trying to keep a very tourism-driven country alive by actually getting out there and seeing a bit of our country and doing stuff. So for the most part, this just falls back into the same category as the other dickhead who was commenting on the car on the sunrise about people just wanting to go out there and exert their own negativity. And as I finally ended up with this thread, it's like, mute, here's a link to the guitar lessons thing. Yeah, like, just go away. So, glad I got that off my chest. Let me look at the comments, and then I'm going to talk about the rest of this this big round Australia trip. Okay, what else did we have in here? As George says here, you went on a holiday and I didn't, which makes you a fuck, which is pretty much the sentiment from some people. I actually have. I was very tempted to make this my first blog post of the year, a little bit about some of the stuff I just want to get rid of online this year, which is meant to be a bit of tongue-in-cheek, and I think this might actually be a useful comment on that. Gordon really enjoyed the follows. Thanks, Gordon. I appreciate that, mate. Did you do any fossicking at Cooper Pedy? So let me start talking about the holiday, and then I'll talk about Cooper Pedy. And, of course, this is just the last week of the holiday. I'm not going to relive all of the memories from everything because that did go on a bit. So I last came to you from Uluru, which you may have also seen referred to as Ayers Rock in years gone by. And that was, without doubt, just the most amazing, place to stay. The place right there was just out of this world for just everything from, yes, it was very, very nice. Don't get upset if you see me doing something nice. But just there's something about service in Australia, which we're chatting about. And, of course, we have done a huge amount of travel around the world. Both of us grew up in airline families, living overseas, doing things overseas, growing up overseas, and then a huge amount of our lives in recent years have been conferences and things around the world. So I reckon we've seen a pretty good sample set. And there's something about good service in Australia where it's not – I'm trying to put this in a way that doesn't upset people anymore. You don't feel like people are being nice to you for a tip, right? We rarely have a tip in Australia. It's just not a thing because people get paid enough in the first place. Other tangent here. So it's not that. It's not that sort of hierarchical sir, ma'am. Da, da, da. It's polite, but it's friendly. It's always at good places like this, people that you'd like to have a nice conversation with and people who are genuinely interested in you and have their own interesting stories as well. So it's just a really, really nice level of service I find in Australia. Even having breakfast this morning down the street, just like friendly, professional, none of that pretentious bullshit that you get in so many other places. So we just found that over and over again, particularly in this place. I don't think we actually did much more after that last video because we did that on New Year's Day. We just had a sort of a really, really, really nice dinner. And then the next day, headed out. Actually, there's one other thing, and I did put photos of this online. I'm just looking at my own personal photo stream here, but I did put this on Twitter. Some of the photos I took from Uluru had lights everywhere. And there's this massive light show, which is a light installation. It's really an artwork, which must cover hundreds and hundreds of square meters with all of these lights that just sit there in the desert and gradually change color. And it was just an absolutely mesmerizing display. So that is in my tweet thread. And it was not something I expected to see out in the middle of the desert, but it was absolutely beautiful. So we went from there to, keep in mind, like plan A was that we're basically just going to drive pretty much halfway around Australia and then come back up the eastern seaboard. So that plan took us down to a place called Cooper Pedy. Now, Cooper Pedy is famous for opal mining. And I think it's meant to be like the number one place for opal mining in the world. It certainly is in Australia. But one of the things that Cooper Pedy is really famous for is living underground because it's so bloody hot. And Cooper Pedy was a good halfway point between Uluru and then the Barossa Valley, which we'll get to in a moment. And the cool thing about Cooper Pedy is living underground. So when we booked a hotel, it's like, I really want to stay underground, like I want to stay in a cave. So we stayed in like this is a very, very different level of accommodation to where we'd just been in Uluru. But, yeah, stayed underground, no air conditioning, just a fan. And whilst it was 30-something outside, Celsius, of course, but, yeah, underground it was a cool probably 23 degrees or something in the room. So that was an interesting place. I'll put a lot more stuff on Facebook, but also the bunch of tweets as well. I made a comment that it feels a bit Mad Max because you look around there and it's just like barren wasteland and a whole bunch of it almost feels like space junk, right? It feels like it could have come out of either Mad Max or Star Wars. Now, that's partly because Mad Max was filmed there. So Beyond Thunderdome was filmed in Cooper Pedy. And I think that's sort of their claim to fame. And it is a fascinating place to look at. So we did a little bit of shopping there. Charlotte looked for opals she liked, didn't find anything. But that's okay. You can buy opals pretty much anywhere in Australia. Just pay a bit more money, I guess, away from Cooper Pedy. So I did that, then headed down to Barossa Valley. Now, Barossa Valley is a wine region in South Australia. On the way down there, stopped at a salt lake. So there's a lot of salt lakes in South Australia. In fact, Lake Eyre is in South Australia. I'm pretty sure it is. Someone's going to tell me if I'm wrong. That's where they've set land speed records before because it's just a massive salt plain. So that was kind of cool to walk around there. Reminded me a little bit of Death Valley in the US where it is like a salt plain. It's actually below sea level in Death Valley, and you can kind of walk around there on the salt crusty underfoot, which is kind of cool. And then Barossa was, I guess it's a lot like, for Aussies, if you've been to the Hunter Valley, it's a lot like that. For folks in other parts of the world, I think a lot of wine regions are like this, where there's just a lot of wineries around and a lot of good food and this sort of thing. So that was kind of cool to hang out there. The photo I tweeted that had the most feedback was we went to a restaurant with just like a massive wall of gin. So if ever you've been to like a whiskey bar and there's just whiskeys everywhere, it was like that, but with gin, which was pretty cool. So that was a nice spot. And then eventually we got down to the coast, and it was the first time we'd seen the ocean since Townsville. So we basically took a great big slice out of Australia in order to get from one coast to the other coast. But it was nice to actually get back and see some ocean again. But it was bloody cold. It was like 17 or 18 degrees, and it's summer and windy. And then we headed from there to Narra Court, where this mate of mine is, and just had a very, very lazy couple of days, taking a big chunk out of some of the wine that we had bought in the Barossa Valley. And, of course, playing with 3D printers. Just look at my photos here. Now, we did decide to cut the holiday a bit short. Our plan A had been we're going to go from there, we're going to go across to country Victoria and see Lars Klint. Many of you know Lars. We're going to have some time with him. We're going to go up to Thredbo, have a couple of nights there, hike up Mount Kosciuszko, which is the tallest point in Australia, do some mountain biking, a couple of nights in the Blue Mountains, which is west of Sydney, and then head home. But unfortunately, there have been some COVID outbreaks initially in Sydney, and later in Melbourne, which is the capital city of Victoria as well. And what it meant was, particularly after the ones in Sydney, states started locking down borders again, putting border controls on. We basically had no border controls just before Christmas. And it sort of began with a bunch of states saying, look, if you have been to Greater Sydney, then when you come back into, for example, my home state of Queensland, you will need to quarantine at your expense in hotel quarantine for 14 days. And even though the Blue Mountains is sort of a couple of hours west of the CBD, it's still part of Greater Sydney. And we went, nah, look, there's no way we're doing that. So we began by saying, okay, we'll just skip the Blue Mountains and we're going to go to Tamworth, which is somewhere way further north. Still go to Thredbo, hike up the mountain, go to Tamworth home. And that was sort of like, okay, we can still do the drive and everything. But just as this cluster kind of grew and grew, and then as there was a bit of an outbreak in Victoria, we just got to the point where we went, look, it's not worth, I guess, to some extent, putting ourselves at risk. We would have been in very rural areas with very low density doing a lot of outdoor stuff anyway, so I think that risk would have been low. But the more realistic risk was, what if we got partway along and then there were changes to borders? Because we were seeing all this stuff on the news about, say, Victorians trying to get back from New South Wales to Victoria and then being in a queue for hours trying to get across the border and then maybe not making it and then being stuck in Victoria and then the only way, or stuck in New South Wales, and the only way you can get back is ending up in hotel quarantine for weeks. So we sort of went, look, we did, to be honest, all of the stuff that we really, really wanted to do, and everything that was left, no offense, Lars, was the lesser priorities, in part because we were at Lars's, I guess, just over a year ago. We've been to Thredbo, the Blue Mountains I've certainly been to before. It's not hard to get to. Like, we can do this stuff again. We can burn that part of the trip and come back and do it again. And by then also we had done, just look at my odometer here, we had done almost 8,500 kilometers of driving, and we were like, well, is it that bad if we don't really do much more driving? So we organized a car carrier. We dropped the car off there yesterday morning, got an Uber to the airport, jumped on a plane, flew home to Brisbane, then back to Gold Coast. So that sort of solved any problems whatsoever to do with COVID, so we don't have to worry about that side of things. The car will be back in, I think, 9 days or something like that, and I'm just driving the GTR around instead until then. So, you know, that was an end to the holiday that they were actually pretty happy with. That was not too bad at all. All right, so I'm going to have a look at some of the other comments just in here, which I have seen popping up as I've gone through. Will Snow's making a comment in Switzerland, most first responsive for page and most communications unencrypted. I think we've pretty much agreed that pages are still a thing and probably have no security in terms of encryption there. Elizabeth, I've seen your comment here about this story from Caitlin Campano. I'll look that up later on. I think other people are mostly enjoying the holidays. To the question here about Tradie Tread, did you do any fossicking at Cooperpedia? I mean, other than like looking in some shops, no. And part of the problem is a lot of this journey was done, over the Christmas period, B, in this COVID era, which really has hit a lot of tourism around the country, and C, in a period which I guess, you know, we have had a lot of economic downturn. So all these things combined, a lot of places felt very, very dead. So there wasn't a lot to actually see at Cooperpedia, and I certainly wasn't going to go digging any holes. So no, we didn't do that. John says, SA is beautiful. Happy to see more images. Yeah, look, it was. It was a lot of it, particularly the Barossa stuff, reminded me of Country Victoria, maybe sort of the Hepburn Springs kind of area as well in terms of the architecture and things. So that was very nice to go and see that. Josh makes a comment of tall poppy syndrome, which is exactly what I refer to in the Hack Your Career First talk at NDC around people getting pissed at you having nice things in life. George, if I had your car, I'd tweet it too. Yeah, right. Like, it's like, if you don't like it, just move on. Read about Capitol Hill in the US or something like that instead. Oh, boy. What else is in here? Strata says, at least it wasn't a photoshopped image making it look like you were there. No, I'll tell you what, I've been to all these places. Darren wants to see my narcissistic blog. Look, there's... I tweet my stuff, but I'm also still very selective because you sort of go, my brand, for want of a better term, and I think it's a bit of an overloaded term, is like me sharing stuff about my life, and it is very infosec related, tech related. Obviously, I've been doing a lot of IoT stuff lately as well. But then a lot of it is, yes, I live in a nice place and I have some nice cars and the boat and the jet ski and stuff like that, and that is my life. Now, do I filter it out because some people might get upset that life is nice? I try to avoid over embellishing it, and I appreciate having like a 4-week holiday in one go. It's like, yeah, you're bombarded with stuff, but for the most part, day by day, you know, I want some candidness there. And if my candidness is not what you like, well, just go and find someone else to follow. It doesn't seem that hard. George says, no longer involved with any infosec stuff. I only follow your Twitter for car porn. I'll tell you, I have been thinking about more cars lately as well, but we might come back to that a little bit later on. Now, Elizabeth's made the comment, Brisbane lockdown now. So got in before that, thank goodness. So there has been a lockdown in Brisbane. Apparently, there is a cleaner from hotel quarantine who's tested positive to the new super infectious UK strain. So Brisbane has gone into lockdown from, I believe, 6 p.m. tonight, which would have been an hour ago, through until Monday. So they basically said, look, just lock everything down for 3 days. Now, we flew back into the airport yesterday afternoon, and I was sort of thinking, hope that doesn't include us. But, it was one of those cases, like I said, we did actually do the mask thing on the plane. A lot of people didn't, but it was kind of like, it's not hard. Just wear the damn thing. I'll put my headphones on and watch the video about the Prusa 3D printers anyway. I really didn't notice it. And then we got off the plane, plenty of room in the arrivals area, got into a car and went home. So, yeah, it's one of those things where I think it was very, very low risk for us, but I am glad it was before that lockdown. So that was good timing. Gordon Beamer, I just noticed that YouTube has a live chat and also a top chats, and it defaults to the miss some comments option. Oh, interesting. I did not know that. Ah, yes, Field of Light. So Stuart has commented, when I said there's all these lights at Uluru, and I'm sure if I Wikipedia this, it is called Field of Lights, is the Wikipedia is the name of the installation. But I think it was a British artist that did it. So if you go to Wikipedia and look at Field of Light, no, that's the wrong one. No, Bruce Munro is the artist here, British artist. And I'm sure if I look at Uluru on this page, oh, so he's done a bunch of ones by the look of it, and one of them was Uluru. But yeah, just super, super epic. If you were to Google Field of Light Uluru and particularly pick up images on that, it is image search. It is spectacular. Not what I was expecting at all. So that was really nice. Samik Edit says, how do you keep up with the work of projects and your daily job? Oh, it's easy. I don't keep up. Like, I literally don't keep up. Over the last 4 weeks, I've loaded one data breach. I have a big backlog, which I'm going to start getting through now. But I think, and also if I look at my email, I've got 100-something emails in my inbox that need to be dealt with. I have come to the realization over, I would say over the last 2 years, I think I've pretty much, it's probably pretty obvious, I've had some form of midlife crisis over the last couple of years. And I have come to the realization that I'm not going to keep up, and it's okay not to keep up. It's okay not to answer a bunch of emails. Look, I don't have to work for anyone. I get to be independent. I obviously do the Have I Been Pwned stuff. I do my conferences and my workshops. I do my NordVPN stuff, my 1Password stuff, and my blog stuff. And I do all that stuff. And a bunch of stuff I don't get to do. You know, I don't get to keep up with everything. I miss a bunch of stuff. That Italian mobile thing, people told me I was days late talking about it. Ah, it doesn't really matter. So I'm just getting to the point where I'm realizing that I'm not going to keep up with everything. I do a shitload. It's got to be stuff that makes me happy. And I'm not going to complete everything. So, yeah, easy answer there. I don't keep up with everything. I just can't. George, who says, I believe Have I Been Pwned is his day job. Don't quote you on that. Probably a good idea not to quote you on that. Have I Been Pwned still a hobby project? And as I said before, it makes money, but it's something that I do as a passion. And as I said before, I've done one data breach in the last month and not much of other things. So, yeah, it's the amount of effort that goes into it oscillates wildly depending on what's happening in the industry, how much time I have, and frankly, what I feel like doing. I mean, all that IoT stuff, maybe I will be an IoT person one day and I'll do a bunch of stuff there and it will have some sort of ROI in a monetary sense. But I blew a shitload of time playing with all that IoT stuff because it was fun and because I didn't think that there was a lot of good material out there to answer the questions that I wanted to learn. Now, during all that time, I could have been out there pimping Have I Been Pwned or loading data breaches or something, but I didn't because that wasn't what I want to do. And I think one of the greatest luxuries of my life at the moment is I get to choose the things that I want to do. And that does mean neglecting other things that I might still want to do, but they're just a little bit lower on the priority list. Pathfinder says it's kind of weird. It feels weird seeing you live for the first time. It's just like when I'm not live, except it's happening at the same time. Think about it like that. Chris, did you watch the Tom Scott video about Cooperpedia before you went? No, and I love the Tom Scott videos too, so I didn't know he'd done one. George Fisher just had a look at the car post. What is it with Tesla people? So, it's all that old joke. I don't know if it's an old joke or maybe it applies to something else. But it's like, how do you know if someone's a Tesla person? Because they'll tell you. One of the things I was actually considering recently was even a Tesla, not to replace any of the cars I have, but for other purposes I'll talk about later on. And, of course, I don't know if it's in the news, but as of today, apparently Elon Musk is now the richest person in the world. He's overtaken Jeff. So, you know, good on him. He's obviously done something very successful. But I think when you say, what is it with Tesla people, where will you find a fucking Tesla charger in the outback? Good question. I'll come back to that. It's obviously an amazingly successful car company. It's made EV accessible to the masses. It's made it sexy. The exhilaration of it is out of this world. There's a lot to really, really love about it. But I think what it is I find most of the people I talk to that are emphatically like over the moon about Tesla are particularly technical people who may not have been car people, and then see all this stuff and then they're like, this is an amazing car. And like it is in so many ways, but then it misses so many other things. I would never trade either my GTR or my E63S for a Tesla for all sorts of different reasons. But that's cool because there's a lot of stuff out there. I mean, now we're starting to see things like the Porsche Taycan, which is becoming very popular. It is an EV. It is a good alternative. There's a Mercedes EQC, which just won Australia's Wheels Car of the Year, actually, and beat out other EV models. But, yeah, there's just obviously Tesla has hit on something which makes people sometimes lose their mind a little bit about it. Now, to your point here, where would you find a fucking Tesla charger in the outback? Well, it was very easy answer. You don't. I did not see a single EV, either Tesla or another model, between Townsville. Maybe I saw one in the Barossa Valley and basically Adelaide. Now, one of those days, we did 1,100 kilometres. Now, 1,100 kilometres is a lot. There are definitely no superchargers in Tennant Creek. I was going to say something that would have seemed really appropriate. Inappropriate. Let's just say if there were, I don't think they would last very long. So this was one of those cases. Now, to be clear as well, it is really rare for someone to drive across the Australian outback. And for the vast majority of people, they're doing short trips in the city every day, and an EV I think would make a hell of a lot of good sense. But that is a trip that there's no way in the world I would have done with an EV at the moment. Particularly given that 1,100K trip in one day, we knocked off in about 9.5 hours, I think. So we stopped. This was like splash and dash. This was like literally F1 style, because that's about how long I wanted to spend outside the car in Tennant Creek. And if you don't know what I mean by that, Google Tennant Creek and see some of the crime it's famous for. So, that's not a trip that you do in an EV, not yet anyway. But in the future, I'm sure you'll be able to get 1,100K out of a charge. I was going to say in the future, I'm sure we'll see superchargers in Tennant Creek. I think we're way off that. But I'm sure you'll get the range in the future to be able to reliably do that. Lots of wineries that sound like here in Slovenia, whole country. I've never been to Slovenia. I hope I get to do that one day. Stratos had his honeymoon in the Blue Mountains. That does sound like a lovely spot. George says, how many speed cameras did you pass? I don't know. I came home to a lot of mail. None of them are speeding tickets, and I certainly never got pulled over either. So for folks interested in speed limits and speed in general in Australia, it varies greatly based on state and location. So one of the things that many people, such as famous racing drivers like Mark Webber, have been very critical of in the past, that Australia does have a bit of an infatuation on speed and speed limits. Victoria has been well known for booking people for doing 3 kilometres an hour over the speed limit. And you might say, okay, well, that's like the width of the needle. Yes, but in Australia, our Australian design rules require that every car has to read high. So if the speed limit's 100K and you're doing 100K, you're actually doing 97K. So one of the reasons I use Waze is you get a GPS speed up on the dash. And every time I've gone past one of those fixed displays that says this is how fast you're going now, it's been spot on. Now, that might seem like 3K an hour, like who kind of cares, just go 3K an hour lower. That does add up after you do 8,441 kilometers, which is what we did. Now, depending on where you are, pretty much once you get off the coast in Australia, everything is 110K an hour. Most of it's 110K an hour, other than roadworks, things like that. Once you get in the Northern Territory, it goes to 130. I have been told that doing 10 over in the Northern Territory, i.e. 140, they don't really care about. People who told me that seem to believe that that is accurate, and I have no reason not to believe that. So it is a big bloody stretch of land. Also, the Northern Territory used to have a lot of unlimited speed zones for quite some time. They then trialled 130K an hour. Unfortunately, the accident rate did go up because the place is so bloody big. There was fatigue and all the rest of it. But political correctness. So now there are no more unlimited speed zones. I think all that went away in about 2006. The 130 zones are the ones that prevail in Northern Territory. What's kind of funny about it is you can be like doing exactly 130, South and the Northern Territory, and then you hit the border into South Australia, and it's like, bam, 110. And just because they're different states, exactly the same road, exactly the same place, exactly the same risk, but down to 110. So in terms of speed cameras, I did see one fixed speed camera in Cairns in the town. I was obviously doing the right thing when I saw it, unless the mail takes longer than what I believe it does. I saw multiple cases of cops in cars, a few cases in the NT of them having pulled people over. I don't know how fast we're going to pull them over. And then I saw one at the end of my road when we were sitting in the back of the car that picked us up from the airport in a place I'd never seen it before. So that wasn't my problem anyway. Dominic, it blows my mind that Oz is that big that you put car on a transporter. Pretty much only time you use a transporter here in the UK is if you've broken down. Well, but keep in mind, it was to avoid us driving through two states, which would have posed a higher risk for us. The other thing is, it would have been more than 2,000 kilometre drive. So there was a bit there where I was kind of like, transporter, or do we just make it a two-day drive and we just stay somewhere along the way? But yeah, it's... Australia is a really big place. I mean, I mentioned this number before, and I must actually plot it all on a Google map and share it later on. 8,441 kilometres. But we did manage to average 88 kilometres an hour on that trip. Now, that included all the time we spent in Port Douglas, where we were just driving backwards and forwards over slower roads between there and Cairns and things like that. The average fuel consumption, 11.6 litres per 100 kilometres. Now, if you do miles per gallon or something, you'll have to work backwards. I got some Twitter hate on that because some people are very unhappy about that. That is what performance cars use. If you go and have a look at many other performance cars, it's a lot more than that. One of the arguments we had, someone was very upset because their Volvo uses about half the fuel. Now, where do we begin on that? I'm happy when I drive my car. Taking shit from Volvo drivers on that, yeah, less happy about that. But again, it sort of came back to this obnoxious thing of I must go out there and tell you what I think of you. And I'm sure there are probably Tesla drivers looking at this Volvo driver going, what a wanker, he's using like 5 litres per 100 kilometres, you know. And then there are other people who just ride bikes around looking at the Tesla drivers going, it's all relative, get over it. So someone here says, so have you planned for your smart home down the road? Well, it's go read the IoT series. That's pretty much the direction we're heading there. I do have more things I'd like to do, which I'll start talking about as I start to get a little bit more time. If I could drive any car, I'd have your car and your jet ski. I must get the jet ski out again. Actually, while we're away, we had a combination of king tides, just that time of the moon and all the rest of it, and massive rainfall. And I got an alert from my Ubiquiti camera in the boat shed that there was movement in the locked boat shed, and the tide had come up so high that fortunately the jet ski wasn't floating, but everything else on the floor was floating. So we've got like kids' kayaks and things. They were floating around, and they actually triggered the motion sensor on the camera and sent me alert. The jet ski fortunately did not float away. Boat was out the back. That was fine. That was on water already. So that didn't float away either, but we had some crazy weather. Marcus says, congrats on making it back in time. Just before the Brisbane situation, which is good. Rich enjoys all the tweets. Fun, interesting, fascinating to see and hear other ideas. Look, I hope so, particularly at the moment. It's like life is really, really messed up for a lot of people, and I totally get that. And I speak to Scott Helm a lot of the time. Most of you know Scott. And it's like it's shit for him. He was messaging me the other day. He just went to these tier 5 lockdowns. He can't go out and drive his buggy around. He got an off-road buggy, which looks super, super cool. I'm really looking forward to being able to go to Scott's home sometime and drive the off-road buggy. If people get a bit of pleasure out of living vicariously through me or other people, then, you know, good stuff. Good on you. Stratus is more jealous of the Lego car behind me. How dare you have it and not me? That's a Chiron. And I've got the Lamborghini Scion, which I'm still only about halfway through, and I've got to find time to do. But then it comes back to the point before about how do you keep up? I kind of don't. And part of the way I don't keep up is I haven't finished the Scion yet, which I really want to. Tesla cars run on coal in Oz, says Greg. So there's, I mean, this is kind of the counter argument to EV, which is not a great counter argument, but a lot of our electricity in Australia comes from coal power, a huge percentage of it. As interesting driving around the country, just seeing how much mining there is, particularly somewhere like Mount Isa. It's massive. And there are all sorts of reasons for this. I'm sure some of them are good reasons. I'm sure some of them are political, and I'm sure some of them are pretty bad reasons as well. It was cool yesterday driving out of Narracourt into Adelaide to see massive solar farms. And we have so much bloody sun here, you'd kind of hope there's a better way of doing it. But, of course, there are people who then have solar on their roof and they have things like Tesla power walls or other equivalents, and they power their EV from that, and good on them. And it is something that I'm thinking about doing in time as well, certainly starting with the whole solar piece. But, yeah, we do have a massive dependency on coal, but as is my understanding, don't quote me on this, something like a Tesla is still going to be much more fuel efficient than obviously burning dinosaurs in your loud twin turbo V8. Sounds bad when you put it that way. But anyway, you get the point. George, the environment is what matters. The lithium has to be worth and the petrol. And we know where the future is going to be. It's just a question of how long we take to get there. What else is in here? What's the price for fuel in Australia? So the highest price I saw for 98 octane. Now, here's part of the problem. Most high-performance cars need high-performance petrol, which in our case is a 98 octane petrol. I have never, ever not put 98 in either of my cars. There are literally stickers on there which say 98, particularly the GTR, which is modified and tuned. I would not want to go and put 95 in there. I carried two bottles of octane booster around in case I needed it for the AMG. I never did. I managed to find 98 everywhere. The highest price, so normally here I'd pay probably about $1.40 something. Like, you don't buy a twin turbo V8 because you're conscious of the price of fuel, so I don't really pay a lot of attention to it. Normally be about $1, let's call it $1.40 Oz for 98 octane. In Uluru, it was almost $2. So that was the highest price I saw there. Diesel, tradie Trevs is $1.10 a litre for diesel. Diesel, of course, I believe you get a lot more miles out of, but it also, a lot more kilometres, sorry, but it also is a lower price point too. Someone here says the great thing about EVs is they have better efficiency, even if the electricity is made by burning dinosaurs. Yeah, and I think that's a very relevant point. But I think that like the way to look at this is we know where we're going with this, right? We know that we will get to a point in the very near future, and some companies are already mandating the abolition of internal combustion engines. We know we'll get to a point where the ICE stuff will be the thing of the past and the EV stuff will be the thing of the future. Well, it's already the thing of the future, but it will be the norm. And I think it's a little bit like the number of people who get pissed off that, we don't have manual gearboxes anymore. It's very rare to have a manual gearbox. Can't buy a Ferrari with a manual gearbox. It's a very niche thing if you want to buy a Porsche. There's no Lamborghinis with a manual gearbox. There's certainly no Mercedes AMG. I don't think there's Mercedes at all. Maybe for some of the other markets where they pump them out cheap. Anyway, so think of the past. It is progression, and there are all sorts of good reasons why it makes sense, as much as I've had fun with manual cars in the past. So this is the direction we're going. I think we just got to get to the point where we have choice, and we manage to sort of change our mindset to the point where we embrace all of the good things about having EVs, and we get more of the good things. At the moment, they're still very heavy cars. I've driven a lot of Teslas. They're good fun, but holy shit, they're heavy cars. And there's nothing quite like having a really lightweight car. Many years ago, I had an MX-5. They call it a Miata in the US, just over a ton, gutless. It was so much fun on the racetrack because they were so light and nimble. So that's something we really don't have with mainstream EVs yet, the emotion of the noise. Now, maybe that's something we'll lose in the same way as we used to have the emotion of being able to heel and toe with a clutch and a gearbox, a manual gearbox. That will change over time. But I think we're just sort of at this point now where, like, yeah, there's a few options and we're getting a lot more options. And the best thing that could happen to Tesla, frankly, is that we have a lot of other non-Tesla options, which are just as popular. Best thing that could happen to all of us, right? We get more choice. But super early days for that, but this is where we will go. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And I just don't know at what point it will be that I will no longer be buying at least a sole internal combustion engine. Maybe McLaren will come out with something epic, which is a hybrid, which the next generation is almost certainly going to be. And it will be like one step there. And then another 10 years later, it's like, well, the EVs are so good and they're so lightweight and the battery lasts so long and you just got so much more power and instantaneous torque that why would you buy an ICE? We're not there yet, but we will be. Okay, so I'm going to wrap it up there because it is a Friday evening here. We're past 7:30 or almost 7:30. I probably should try and unpack some of my stuff and try and actually get back in my normal routine, which means next week doing this again, hopefully in the morning time so we can pick up the US audience as well and getting back to the normal programming cycle of InfoSec and IoT and other tech things. So thanks very much for watching. For those of you who have chimed in around enjoying the journey and the cars and the sights of Australia, thanks a lot. It's really been fun sharing it. I get a lot of pleasure out of seeing people's reactions to enjoying the things that I enjoy as well. Take care. I'll see you next week.